Welcome to the Mastering Mindfulness Institute, a place to stop diet sabotage and create a life of balance. I'm your host, Gina Werfel, registered dietitian and master of human nutrition. Let's dive in.
Hey, welcome back. Today we're going to talk about tapping into a deeper level of our own personal power. And we can do that when we heal our own emotional traumas and experiences and silencing that inner critic. And how do we start to develop a relationship with that inner critic and overcome some difficult life experiences that we've had? And today I have had the incredible opportunity of interviewing my friend Rob Sirstens. He's an executive coach who helps people navigate their life challenges and experiences to really become stronger and more resilient and free from these things that we don't even realize might be holding us back. And so Rob has had a really incredible journey of childhood traumas and challenges and all these things that if you were to hear his story, you would think like, man, he must be so stuck or a reason to be angry or a reason to be in a victim place because of all of his challenges. And he has worked and been so dedicated to overcoming the most difficult traumas and challenges to really see himself clearly and really tap into his potential. And so Rob is incredible at helping others and challenging them to see that their mindset, their experiences, that's what actually can, their mindset around their experiences is what can really break them free of these limitations that keep them stuck. Rob wrote an incredible book called Ego of the Warrior, and I can't wait to dive in and talk about that and how the ego plays a role in all of this. And it's incredible. I hope you enjoy this episode today on the journey of, regardless of what you have been through or the journey that you have been on, we can overcome these limitations and our beliefs and reframe our thoughts and find a lot of freedom. I hope you enjoy. Hey, Rob, thank you so much for being here. I'm so good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Super, super grateful to be here.
You know, I'm so glad that you wanted to have this conversation with me today because we've connected before, but I've never really heard like the depths of your story. But I don't know if you know this, but before I even met you, you know, we met at a retreat, but before I even met you, I was like, I felt this resistance to meeting you. And at the time, there was somebody, I'm not going to say who it was just for privacy reasons, but there was somebody really close to me who was coaching with you and mm-hmm. you were his coach. And he said, I just got this new coach, this men's coach. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And he goes, yeah, he's teaching me how to love myself. And that, and it like totally caught me off guard because I knew this person is just like this very like masculine, tough man. And I was like, really? He's teaching you how to love yourself? And he's like, yeah, it's awesome. And I remember really judging it and thinking like, that's a really weird thing. But then over the time I watched this guy's life, it just expand in so many ways, like with his work and his relationships. And I was like, wow, that is really, I don't know what happened in that experience or in the sessions with you, but something really powerful is happening. So why do you think, like, how is self-love or our inner critic or our relationship to ourselves, like such a powerful thing?
Yeah, it's absolutely imperative for us to operate in this world, but unfortunately, we're programmed at a very young age to think differently and operate differently from certain situations, from parents, from family, from childhood, where we're not really prepared to take on the world. And so that self-love that I feel is already intrinsic within us is slowly taken away, at least the belief system. And what happens is we start believing the stories, we start believing the trauma. And unfortunately, that sets the trajectory of how we choose to operate our entire lives. Unless something or someone comes and intervenes and reteaches us what deep down subconsciously we may already know, right? And so what I find is with my work, what I do, and even from my own personal past, not many people even I understand or identify what self-love is, right? And self-love is very oversaturated. It's very overused. It's, you know, correlated with going to the spa, getting your nails done, getting massaged. Like, yeah, that's self-love. But in reality, it's, for me, I ask someone that is having a hard time to truly understand what self-love is, I ask them to think of like someone that they love the most, whether it's their mom, whether it's their child, whether it's their best friend. And I always ask like, okay, do you love them? And the answer is always like, yeah, of course I do. And it's that quick. I'm like, okay, I want you to concentrate on that feeling. Now, do you love yourself? And it's either, well, I think I do, or it's, no, I don't think so. Right? For a lot of people that haven't stepped into this work. Yeah. And so it's just not one of those things of showing up for yourself in a physical manner.
Yep.
It's a deep, visceral work of loving your heart, mind, soul, and body.
I love that you said that. Like, it gives me goosebumps because so right around that time, I remember being at that retreat, and I remember you coming in at this retreat, and I don't know why, but I was like, there was something that I was avoiding the heck out of you. And I think that it was right before I really started to do like the deeper self-love work. And I think my brain was just like, we ain't going there. And sure enough, partway through the retreat, I remember you sitting right next to me. And the only thing that just fell out of my mouth was just like, why is it so hard to love myself and so easy to be hard on myself? And I remember what you said was like, what does it feel like when you're hard on yourself? And I'm like, oh man, it's like, oof, it's so uncomfortable. It's just like, it does not feel good. And you're like, what does it feel like when you love yourself? And I was like, oh, it feels like home. And that was it. Like, it just felt like home in my body. So like, that's a really amazing way to explain it. But I think that there's also like a really big fear around it. Why do we have such a big fear, or there's like such a stigma around like self-love is like mushy, or it won't actually, like, you won't actually want to change if you love yourself, like you'll be unmotivated. Why do we have that view of it? Is that true?
Well, I feel it is very easy, especially in Western society, where it's this continual grind mentality, that we've been indoctrinated with the, it's good to be hard on yourself. You need to beat yourself up. You need to shame yourself when you're not doing the thing or accomplishing the thing, right? And that's what so many of us do and we grew up doing. And so when we think of the alternative of like, okay, well, if I love myself, it's going to make me lazy. It's going to make me complacent, right? We attach all these different stories because it's so foreign to what we know, right? Just like you, I was the biggest critic of myself, especially as a former athlete. I don't care if I had the best football or rugby game, I'd be focusing on all the things that I did wrong, right? And how many of us do that, whether it's with our career, whether it's a conversation in our relationships, we just focus on the negative, right? And so to bring that open, yeah, it's actually very normal to feel it almost in this like alien way, this foreign feeling that, oh, if I love myself, I'm going to attach all these stories to it. So it's so much easier for me to stay in this program of which I'm already in, right? And so that's why it's just, you kind of feel that resistance when it's stepping into this work.
And do you think that there's truth to it? Do you think that when you see people who love themselves, like, what is the outcome? Because it can be kind of a scary thing. Like, will I actually become lazy? Is that true?
Right. So I find that question interesting because I've heard it many times. And so if you think of it this way, is laziness self-love? Or is rest self-love? Right.
Laziness, it's getting very like a judgment.
Clear. Right. It's getting very clear on the verbiage. Now, if I'm in choice every day with the work that I've done and realizing that I can choose, right, to show up self-care and show up with self-love, that's going to give me even more motivation to do those things I know I need to do and that I want to do, right? It's going to give me more opportunity to take risks, greater opportunity, whether it's with a career, whether it's with a relationship, because I'm loving myself there. Mm. How many of us talk our way out of certain situations or opportunities because we're too much focusing on the self-shame and the self-hate and the lack of self-love, right? And so it's getting really clear on the narrative and the story that we're telling ourselves between what is self-love and what is the lack of self-love, right? When I was in my darkest and darkest of places over 7 years ago, when I was dealing with suicidal ideation, I was exhausted all the time, exhausted all the time. And it's because there was so much trauma that I was holding in my body that I didn't know what to do with. I didn't even know what it was. Mm. Right. And so a lot of people could say, yeah, I was lazy, because between work, between, you know, my clients, when I was personal training, I was sleeping. And there's even a piece of me that thought I was really lazy. I definitely wasn't self-loving myself. I was in the gym 3-4 hours a day, punishing myself for the self-hate I was riding with. Right. And it's amazing how much that shifted 7 years later to where I am today, of where I'm in choice, where I'm no longer punishing myself in a gym. I'm in choice with it. I'm not forcing myself between sets and reps and all that. When my body feels good and done, I'm done. Right. So it's gaining me greater choice. Now, as an athlete, I didn't have that choice. Right. I had a regimen I had to follow. Times I had to wake up, it was really hard and tiring. And it's amazing, like, just looking at the different contrast from then until now of how much self-healing and self-love actually gives you choice. Mm. And that's what healing is.
Wow. So where do you think that, like, how, when you're working with people, how early back do you think it usually starts that we develop this maybe inner critic or this voice that we think is helpful because maybe we think it's motivating, but might actually be capping us and keeping us out of choice? Like, where does that all start from? Or how early did that start for you?
I believe it started for me as a newborn. You know, I was born into a very chaotic time where my mother was 17. She would leave us for days, me and my four-year-old sister, and come back with different men. And there was different abuses that happened during the first 3 months of my life. And then going into a society, being adopted by a beautiful, beautiful family, but going into a society where I was rejected for my skin, right? And so I started believing everything that I was told, right? That I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't white enough, all that. So that's where the self-hate was indoctrinated within me, right? But it's interesting because I believe sometimes I'm going to be careful with how I word. I'm going to explain this and then I'm going to explain it again. The trauma response serves us, right? When we're told we're not good enough, sometimes it's going to push a lot of people to be like, prove it to everyone else, I'm good enough, mm-hmm. right? And that's what I did, to earn a college scholarship and be invited for, you know, USA rugby and all that at a young age. It served me. I wasn't happy. I wasn't in self-love, but I knew how to control my body and have it perform at top tier, right? But when all that was over and the dreams dashed and I didn't make the NFL and all those things, I had to recalibrate. But there was a good 10 years of limbo where it's just like, I don't belong here. I don't belong in this corporate America. I don't belong with this job, right? So that trauma response was no longer serving me. It was actually killing me. It was killing me slowly, right? And so, yeah, there is stages where you see a lot of the most successful people, especially superstars, you hear their backstory. You hear the trauma that they've gone through. You hear, like, a lot of people, a lot of my clients that are multimillionaires always have a very significant backstory, traumatizing backstory. And it's usually the core belief was like, I was told I wasn't good enough. So I just wanted to tell fuck everybody and I'm going to go get my own. And that's what they did. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's interesting. But then when the wheel starts to wear off, they've got their success and it's just like, okay, this is no longer serving me. I have to reprogram. I have to shed this old skin.
Interesting. And then what happens? Yeah. What if you shed the skin? Then what?
Right. And that's where it gets a lot of scary, really scary for a lot of people. They're like, well, it served me for this much. Right. My anger, my rage, my pain, my feeling of like imposter syndrome, yeah, it got me all these things. But at the same time, I always ask the question, well, are you happy? Well, no. No. I'm like, interesting, because you got the cars, you got the houses. If you're single, it seems like you got the girls. They're like, yeah, but I just need more. And that's where a lot of top tier people fall off, because they create this black hole around themselves, right? They're like, if I only get more, if I only get more, then I'll be happy. This destinational happiness, right? And what they find is, like, no matter what their bank account looks like, they're still running on empty.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a shift in the pattern. It's just like, okay, well, what do you desire? Well, I desire to be happy or somewhat content, right? I desire to be present. I desire to have greater connection with people. And I did, and you know, I desire to actually enjoy my life with the things that I'm doing. That's the shift of the self-love, where the deeper work starts to bring in, mm-hmm. right? It allows those people to really be present in their day-to-day life and actually enjoy what they're doing without this trauma response running them the entire time, telling them more, more, more. That's just an empty black hole.
Yeah. I think usually when people get to that point of where they're running off of a trauma response, it takes such a toll on their bodies. Like,
right.
I think it just creates that, if you're constantly telling yourself and you're in that like stress response all day long. I mean, even entrepreneurs who are in their 30s that I've worked with, who are like, don't want to give up that story because it feels like they're fuel.
Right.
But at the same time, their stress is really taking a toll on their body.
Right.
So.
And it's really easy for a lot of people to disassociate from their body, especially with the trauma they've experienced. And whether they're feeding it constantly with alcohol, with drugs, with lack of nutrients. It's really easy for people to create the story that like, oh, my body will be fine and recover. And you start getting into your mid-30s, you start getting into your 40s, which I know you see day in and day out, and 50s, and then you get to see the serious consequences of what you've done to your body and realizing, oh, I don't get to replace this. I'm stuck with this, right? So there is a lot of regret, and there's a lot of deeper work and deeper financial investment that has to go to kind of self-abandoning our own body.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so how does like your book is called Ego of the Warrior. How does the ego play a role in all of this?
You know, I've had an interesting relationship with my ego over the course of my life, which a lot of us do, right? For the longest time, for the majority of my life, my ego ran my operating system, right? I wore a mask to fit in. I wore a mask with different people and different situations and different teams just so I could belong, right? And then it betrayed me over and over with my ego when it came to relationships, because in earlier romantic relationships, I would choose my ego over the relationship. There was no three strikes with me. It was you're one and done. Right. And I hurt a lot of people because I would, you know, I would abandon people before they could abandon me. I would always lead with this place of just like, I know better. And this victim mentality ran my life for so long. And then you step into the spiritual world and then you hear this phrase over and over, like, you got to kill your ego. You got to kill your ego.
Right.
There's nothing more that I disagree with. Right. You literally cannot kill your ego. It makes zero sense. But I found.
I say, well, can you explain what do you think the ego means, or keep
for me?
What you're saying
for me, my the ego is your identity, right? Is a big part of your identity, and it's either who you claim to be or who you are, right? And I know there's a lot of different definitions. This is just what is true to me.
Yeah. Okay.
And so when people say kill your ego, there's actually a self-abandonment that comes with that, right? There's a place where it's just like you're denying part of who you are, whether it's your body, whether it's your soul, whether it's the face or the mask that you're wearing. And one of the greatest things I learned from a men's retreat I was hosting, one of the men said, I found that I've been in more harmony with my life when I decided to partner with my ego. When I decided to see what was going on and to create greater awareness, right? And be the spectator at times. And then I could, you know, reset and see where things need to shift and my blind spots and everything over there. That makes so much more sense to me, to be in harmony with your ego rather than constantly shaming and beating yourself up and looking at the mirror and saying not good enough simply because you're not in harmony with yourself.
What does it look like when you're not in harmony with your ego? What might that look like? And what does harmony look like with your ego?
I feel you're definitely in a place of kind of like what I said, with a lot of self-shame, with a lot of self-abandonment when you're not in harmony with your ego, right? We take that when you're trying to force to kill your ego with that story, there's a lot of self-abandonment that comes with that. And there's a lot of confusion. And you're actually pushing out this entire human experience, this human existence of what we're living in, right? You're trying to deny something that's actually there that you can't get rid of.
Right.
So you can shame it and block it out all you want, but it's going to keep you on an ongoing spiral. And kind of like what I reiterated, when you're in harmony with your ego, you're actually in choice. You're actually aware. You're actually empowering yourself because you're seeing what's there, right? But if you're constant confliction with yourself, that's a very tiring, conflicting place to be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think a lot of us are trying to understand, like, how do we use our ego on our side instead of against us? And So how did that show up for you and then become something that was so pivotal that you wrote a book about it? Like, what role did that play for you?
Yeah, so I realized how much I had been self-abandoning and self-betraying with my ego.
In what ways?
How many relationships I ruined, how many people I hurt, especially women I dated in the past, by simply just being unforgiving because I pushed my ego first, right? With the pain and trauma that I was projecting over everyone, right? And then it got to a place where I had a gun in my head, right? And it was funny how interesting my ego showed up. And my ego showed up and said, Rob, you're not going to lose to yourself today. Like, that was the thought process that came to me. And ever since then, you know, that was in 2017, when I decided to be in harmony with myself. And obviously, I didn't phrase it like that back then, because my lack of awareness and the lack of significant healing, everything began to shift. Right? I feel so many people are walking around with so much confliction within themselves, whether it's with their body, whether it's with where they're at in their life, whether it's with, you know, their relationships. Everything began to shift to me once I began to allow myself to align. Right? And when I say align, I'm not near perfect, nor am I choosing to chase down perfection. I'm not a perfectionist by heart. A lot of people are. And what that did to me is grant so much more capacity for self-forgiveness, right? And getting to the place of understanding, like, I'm going to mess up. I'm going to disappoint. I'm going to disappoint myself. And that also gives me the capacity in the room to grow and heal from those choices and to correct my behavior in the future the best I can with the awareness that I have.
So that align was like acceptance for you, like all of it,
right?
Like allowing yourself to be messy, and that brought things into what you now know as harmony.
Yeah. Harmony and a full acceptance. To me, the phrase I like to use, or the word, is knowing, like full self-knowing of who I am, right? I know my bullshit. I know my trauma responses. I know, you know, I know where my anger and my rage sometimes gets the best of me, right? And I know there's so much out there that I still need to learn, because there's so much out there that I don't know, right? And giving myself that space of feeling like I always need to be on and always need to be perfect and always need to have this mask on to show everyone in the world and the healing space that Rob's got it together. Rob doesn't have it perfectly together at all. But I'm doing my best and I'm figuring it out.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Which makes you a master of the work. It's like when you've got the problem, you know it better than anybody.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Something that you had just said, did you just say?
What did you just say a second ago?
Oh, so with that, though, in order to get to that place of having all of those things and having the growth and having the reflection, is like it starts with even a willingness to like look at those things about yourself. And unfortunately, it's like we're not even in a culture that says like we have traumas, we have emotional outbursts, we have all these different things that can like be our next breadcrumb on the trail of like knowing what do we need to like heal next or work on. Or it's like it starts with first letting go, I think, of the shame and the judgment that we have around even having those things.
Right. Right. I mean, first and foremost for me, it started with intention. Mm. It got to the place with me, like what I just shared, it was do or die. Mm. I was literally going to leave this world by choice. Or else I had to figure out life with purpose. And that came with self-healing.
So right? For you, you got to the place of like suicidal like thoughts and you were going to take action on it because you're feeling like this lack of purpose. Is that like the place of where you got to?
Yeah, it was lack of purpose. It was the knowing, the feeling of knowing that I didn't belong, like with my trauma, feeling like I was a constant mistake. Mm. And then all the dreams and opportunities failed, you know, 35 years old, you know, failed startup, just accumulation of beliefs, toxic belief systems that were instilled with me that never got repatterned and never got healed, where it came to the point where literally, like I said, I had a gun in my head. And so that following day, I realized like I needed to live with intention. I needed to live with purpose, whatever that looked like. Football was gone. It was no longer an opportunity there, right? And I was getting too old to play rugby. And so that was my salvation for so much of my life. It was the only place I found solace and belonging. And now with that long gone, it's like corporate America was not the thing for me, right? It never was. And so I had to figure out this path. And then a couple of years later, I stepped fully into coaching. And that's where I found my purpose. As with my healing, I stepped further and further into my power, which I feel all people do.
Mm. So with being in a place where like you have this anchor and you're at the point where you're like, this is it, it's do or die. Mm-hmm. And your first start was like intention of like, okay, I'm going to make a conscious effort to like heal this and go right into it. Where do you even begin? Especially because there's so many people who are like, I feel empty inside. I have no purpose. I'm drowning. I can feel I have all these beliefs in my worthiness from my parents or my experiences. Like, I don't even know how to take the first step.
Right. So for me, when all this crashed down, my startup had just failed. I was in a lot of debt with money. Excuse me. And so I couldn't even afford therapy like I used to. I didn't have insurance. I wasn't covered because I wasn't in corporate America. And so I had to get to a place of I needed to start researching on YouTube. What was wrong with me? I started putting in symptoms. I started, you know, started understanding the significance of being adopted and the significance of being abandoned, mm. right? And then there's so many questions that were just unanswered, right? Of this victim mentality that I carried on for so long. Poor Rob. God hates me. The world hates me. This white society hates me. Like all these stories. And so I had to piece them together. And then I found, you know, our retreats that we do. And that shifted significantly, right? With that sense of belonging and seeing so many people that otherwise I would have be not in anything in common with, but we found the same belonging through different connections and sharing each other's story. Mm. Right. And that was huge. Like, oh, wait, yeah. You went through this shit too.
Right.
You know what that feels like? And then all of a sudden my walls slowly began to fall down. And I'm like, okay, this is where I belong. This feels good. And so it all starts with intention and then taking a small step after false step and whatever feels good. Mm. Right. And what I mean by that, like there's so many different healing groups. There's so many different modalities out there now that it's not each one is for everyone, but you will find one that is for you where you're going to make a major, major gains on your healing and your. I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Sorry,
okay.
Internet stopped for 1 second. It was mine that just went out for 1 minute. Okay, so you said you're going to make huge, huge gains.
Right. Right. And that was pretty much it. Just like finding the correct modality in the fight and the right group. And then if you're at a place where you can afford therapy, coaching, or mentors, you get to start to stepping into that place, right? And one thing I say all the time, coaching and therapists, it's like dating. You're not gonna be aligned with every single one, but then you find the right one and then the sky's the limit.
I think sometimes you can just energetically feel like who sounds like, they might have something for me. And sometimes we get so afraid of like, oh, but will this fix me? Will this, you know, will this be the answer or the thing? But there's so much freedom for me. I have found so much freedom in just feeling like, do I maybe think this person has something for me or resonate with me? And just how much my life expands and grows from these deeper conversations that most people aren't having, and having a coach who can like reflect back, hey, like, let's explore, is that inner critic or something really old that's actually just really like that anchor that's still holding you back? So it's really powerful, the work that you're doing. What is like a, I'm curious of like a sneak peek of like, as you're working with people, what is that experience like?
You know, I take my my work and my clientele very, very seriously. And my goal is more than anything is to build a very strong bond of trust, right? Because if there's trust, there's safety. And if there's safety, there's openness to vulnerability. And if we can get open to vulnerability, there's where the deeper work is, right? And so for me, it's really identifying the direction you're trying to go, right? And then we start teasing out the stories that you've created for yourself or that your trauma has created, right? And the relationships. And it's just a back and forth of beautiful ping pong for a while, right? And I love so much what I do. I hold it so sacred because every single client I have, I consider family. Like that's how I take it in, right? And we get to a place of I don't consider myself a healer. I don't really like that terminology at all. I feel it's people that show up and that are open to do the work. They're going to see the most significant shifts in their life than they've ever seen, right? People that show up and take it 50%, 30%, that's all you're going to get out of it. I'm not here to do the work for you. I'm here to create the safety in the container and help you create the tools for yourself in order to self-heal and empower.
Love
so
it.
That's what I do.
I love it. I love it. It needs the radical responsibility for like, you're here, I got you, and I can't do it for you.
Right. Right.
For sure. Right. So if you had any advice for somebody who is like just getting started on this path, what kind of advice, maybe just as a way to get started?
For me, it's taking the time to really feel into what is it that you truly desire, right? Why do you feel like you're looking for it, right? And obviously there is some self-awareness going on if you're tipping the toe in the water and talking to coaches and mentors and therapy and really getting clear on that desire. Like if a lot of the people you and I work with, Gina, are a lot of, you know, self-starters and entrepreneurs and things like that. And corporate America too, which is great, but it's if people can create their success in one dimension of their life, you can create healing and self-love in another, right? But like all of us, we need mentoring and we need coaching. And so it's just putting in that effort and giving yourself permission to be a little vulnerable and open up, like, hey, this is where I am. This is my shit, and this is where I'm looking to go, right? And I make it very clear to everybody, especially when I'm speaking or in groups, like I'm not a coach for everyone. And what I think is funny is your response with me when we first met is a natural response for probably 20 people, 20 or 90% of people, right? I bring an interesting energy where it's either intimidation or I'm very misread. It's one of the two, right? And what I love is when people take their time to actually sit down and like, oh, this is who you are. I'm like, yeah, this is who I am. Because it's really easy to to look at Rob and be like, oh, he's just a big dumb gym rat jock or something like that. And I love that. It doesn't offend me at all because I love to surprise people, right? And to sit down and have a hold a process or a conversation and realize like there's more, there's a lot more.
You know, I think for me, I avoided you because I knew that there was the piece that I needed that I didn't want to go into.
I was like,
a mirror of where I'm at on my self-love journey. Don't want to see it. But then, it's amazing. Like, really, when you do experience it, it's like there's so much joy and freedom on the other side. And I realized like everything that I was afraid of around loving myself was like, they were just fears and none of it was true.
Right.
And the deeper that relationship got, my life just got better and better and better and better and better, and nothing got lazy and worse. And, you know, and I do rest when I need to, but it just, it's amazing, you know, when we get out of our own way in these stories and what's possible and how our lives can just get better and better. So it's incredible. Anything else that you want to leave people with before we jump off?
Well, there's two things. One, I just want to say how amazingly proud of you I am, and just seeing your evolution and your work over these last few years.
Aww.
Just really fully step into the embodiment of a queen.
Aww.
You're amazing. And
thank
I just
you.
Need you to know that. It's been really fun and beautiful to watch, even though most of the time it's been from afar, but I still see and I'm checking in with you.
Thank you.
So it's been an honor. And, you know, the second thing is, it's just, don't allow yourself to be afraid of stepping into this work and showing up for yourself, because despite your stories, despite the negative thinking, there is so much love and empowerment. And I believe superpowers on the other side of healing.
Mm-hmm.
However you choose to do it, whoever you choose to do it with, but there's nothing more empowering than seeing where you once were and stepping into the human, or uncovering the human of who you can become. You just choose to get a little dirty and do some work. That's beautiful.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Rob. Where can people find you and your book and all of your work that you're doing? I know that like you're speaking, you're doing coaching. Where can people find information all about that?
So just robsirstins.com. Is my website, Sirstins, and just Rob Sirstins is my handle on everything. So really easy to find if you can spell my last name right.
Yeah, I'll put all the links in the notes. So thank you so much for being here, Rob. I appreciate you.
Hey, thank you. I truly appreciate it. It's been an honor.
You guys, I hope you learned a lot. You got inspired today to do the deep and dirty work. And I'll put all the links below. You can check out all of Rob's work. It's incredible. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.